counting down to the most interesting Seahawk on the 2021 roster with Jake and Stacy. Number 9.
And our list continues with cornerback DJ Reed. Cornerback going to be a huge battle for the Seattle Seahawks. So let's start with someone who should have a starting role solidified. That is Dennis Dwayne Reed Jr. I was wondering what the DJ stood for. Now I know it's Dennis Dwayne. D.D. Reed, but it's D.J. Reed because he's a junior. He was a 2018 draft pick out of Kansas State by the 49ers, and the 49ers placed him on waivers, hoping, and this is kind of the report, hoping to kind of slip him through there under the radar when he suffered a torn pec injury. John Schneider, though, knew exactly what the 49ers had with D.J. Reed, decided to scoop him up, add him to the roster. He joined the Seahawks midway through the season, made his debut against his former team, the 49ers, and was a stellar addition, a clear improvement at cornerback. Looking to snag the starting cornerback spot this year, Jake, what makes him one of the most important Seahawks of 2021?
Well, clearly what makes him one of the most important Seahawks in 2021 is the fact that the cornerback group going into this year is the biggest question mark, without a doubt, on your roster currently. And DJ Reed showed major flashes of being not just a good contributor for your team, but being a guy that could be your top corner heading into this year, being the guy that could be not only the mouthpiece of that group, but also being a playmaker. And that, to me, is one of the biggest things that we saw from DJ Reed that was sorely missing from this group since, honestly, the Legion of Boom days. You had Shaquille Griffin, a part of this roster, a part of this group, and he is obviously was your most talented corner and had a Pro Bowl year back a season ago. But the problem is that Shaquille Griffin rarely got his hands on the football. He had 4 interceptions last year, which was a career high, really the first time that he had generated any type of high interception numbers or respectable interception numbers. That was one of the biggest critiques of his game, was that he did not get his hands on the football. And DJ Reed, from the moment he stepped on the field, found a way to make plays. He made not just easy interceptions where the ball just kind of fell in his lap, he was in the right place at the right time, but he made things happen. He saw things play out in front of him. He read and reacted to the plays. For a 5'9 corner, he held his own against some of the bigger receivers in the league. He was tough, he was scrappy, and he was a big part of that turnaround that we saw from the defense in the second half of the season. And quite honestly, Stacey, you highlight John Schneider and the Seahawks front office taking DJ Reed off the scrap heap and the 49ers trying to slip him by underneath the, you know, through the cracks here. This was one of the best jobs that John Schneider and this front office has done in quite some time in terms of finding a diamond in the rough, an unknown guy, plugging him in and playing halfway through the season after recovering from a serious shoulder injury. And this guy coming in and making impact from day one. He came in as a nickel corner against the Buffalo Bills. That's how he got his first start, in replacement of Ugo Amadi, who was down with an injury. The next week after that, he plays outside corner and never looks back from there, with the opportunity that he had to replace Trey Flowers after Flowers got an injury. So you look at what's heading into this year, Stacey. It makes you nervous. And the reason why we have, which I think is somewhat controversial, DJ Reed at number 9 over Akilla Witherspoon, mm-hmm. is because DJ Reed, 1, was in the system last year, 2, took on a leadership role, and 3, I think has the ability to be your most dynamic playmaker, as I highlighted before, in terms of generating interceptions, getting his hands on the football. And when it comes to Pete Carroll's defense of cover 3 zone, it's not just about understanding your zone and where you're supposed to be in responsibility of that deep third, not letting anybody else get over the top, but it's having a great understanding of what offenses are trying to do to you, reading, reacting, understanding, and flying to the football and making plays when quarterbacks make mistakes. That's what DJ Reed showed what he could do last year. And Akilla Witherspoon, although I think has the highest ceiling out of any cornerback in the room at this current time, with his size and length and everything else, DJ Reed, to me, I feel like I can bank on him, which is crazy, only playing half a season. I feel like I can bank on him more than I can Akilla Witherspoon, mm-hmm. with the injury history that we have seen from him over his you know, first 3-4 years in the league.
Now, Reed had maybe his best game in a win over Washington 2015. He had 3 passes defensed and an interception, covered their top playmaker, Terry McLaurin, for the majority of the game. And that was the game. I mean, it happened throughout the course of the season where I remember the three of us, you, Curtis, and I, texting each other in Reed's debut against San Francisco saying, is he your best corner? Because at that point, the passing defense was still struggling. They were still leading the league in yards surrendered to opposing passers. And we were texting each other like, hang on a minute. DJ Reed coming in here suddenly looks visibly to our eyes so much more impressive. What's going on here? That Washington game, though, was when we said, this guy is making his case for a starting role, not just now, but next year.
Yes.
And they need to figure this out. What was it that you saw from Reed when he was at his very best?
Well, what I saw at his very best is something that we've been able to dive into with him as a personality. I mean, we've had him on our show. We've had him on our airwaves here at 710 ESPN and talked to him about his journey, his process, his mindset. And one of the things that I love about DJ Reed is he is a classic throwback type of Seahawk in the sense that he's been overlooked pretty much every step of the way in his career, is undersized, 5'9", 5'8", even, potentially. And everybody questions, you know, his ability to stay in this league, especially as an outside corner. You know, you don't usually see those type of guys.
Yeah.
The transition, thanks to Seattle, thanks to Pete Carroll, has been trying to find size, trying to find length out on the edge. And DJ Reed is that throwback, smaller, undersized corner that's fast, that's instinctual, and he carries a massive chip on his shoulder. And what I see from him, particularly in that Washington game that you highlighted, he's not backing down from anybody. He accepts the challenge, mano a mano. He wants to run it back every single down, and I love that about him. And he is constantly chirping, and I don't think he's the same way as Richard Sherman and some of these other guys that we have seen, but he does have serious bravado out there. And when you talk about leadership, you talk about attitude, you talk about, you know, this defense getting their bite back, DJ Reed is one of those guys that can bring that to the table along with Jamal Adams and Bobby Wagner and other guys within that locker room. I think that that is a huge missing element. And when I watch him on the field, he is scrappy, he is tough, and that is something that I really, really enjoyed watching from DJ Reed, and something that I'm hoping that he can continue to keep building off of heading into year two, understanding who he is, understand his time and place of when to jam, when to, you know, crowd, when to shoe step, which that means is being around 5 yards to the line of scrimmage and matching and mirroring the guy rather than, you know, full on what we're everybody's accustomed to is getting your hands on them right at the line of scrimmage. You know, DJ Reed does an excellent job shoeing, mirroring the receiver close to the line of scrimmage. So I think that those are the things that DJ Reed has to really focus on, really emphasize. And he's going to get his fair share of challenges in this league when you have to go up against DeAndre Hopkins, when you have to go up against now A.J. Green and some of the bigger receivers, Debo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk. He's going to have his challenge. Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, of receivers within his own division. And I'm excited to see how DJ Reed responds to the challenge of not just being a plucky guy that is able to come in the second half of the season, someone who's scrappy trying to prove something. One of these guys that is slated, expected to win a starting job heading into training camp, and can he maintain that role all the way through the season? That's going to be the big question.
Now, let's take a step back to add context as to why DJ Reed in particular as your lead cornerback is so important, because we have to talk about the Seahawks secondary as a whole and what they have to improve on last year. We all know that the Seahawks improved overall on defense in the second half of the season. Now, that could have been because a healthy Jamal Adams and the addition of Carlos Dunlap were catalysts. It could have been weaker opposing quarterbacks that were catalysts. I mean, the reality is there were myriad things that came together, including a midseason meeting to help this team really revamp on the defensive side of things. Even then, even with a significantly better second half, not just up front, but in the secondary, this team still finished near the bottom of the league in total pass yards allowed. And it wasn't just because of a horrendous first half, although that was a big part of it. It was also because there were still some slip-ups. There were still mistakes that they made. So when we're talking about how important DJ Reed is, it's important to stress how important it is in today's NFL against great passers, in the schedule the Seahawks are going to have in 2021, where they're going to be facing Aaron Rodgers. They're going to be facing Matt Stafford. They're going to be facing great offenses. How important it is that this secondary, in particular this cornerback group, which is right now a big question mark, be solid. It is so important they do that. And DJ Reed, like you've said, Jake, has to lead that charge.
He does. They have to step up to the challenge. They cannot start the season like they did a year ago. That's unacceptable. There's no excuses. I don't care who is out there at corner. That is unacceptable for this program, this franchise. They are better than that. And one of the other things that coincides with them being better in terms of pass defense is, individual performance. But also, what also happened? Your pass rush got significantly better. And if this group can be better up front with their pass rush, it will greatly help out some of those issues. It will help out a DJ Reed, a Kyle Witherspoon, a Trey Brown. Yes, it will be complementary to that back end and allow them to be more aggressive, allow them to take more chances, and it will allow them to not have to cover for as long. So all that comes together, but DJ Reed coming in, cracking our top 10 of most important Seahawks. DJ Reed, got to come through big for us, man.
And that was Dennis Dwayne Reed Jr., number 9 on the list of 15 most important Seahawks heading into 2021. If you guys miss any of this countdown, you can listen. It always kicks off the third hour of Jake and Stacey. All right, and thanks to Jake for his training camp preview with number 9, DJ Reed. In for Jake today is Michael Bumpus. Bump, you said DJ Reed is kind of the closest guy that you could sharpie in as a starter at corner for the Seahawks right now. What did you see from his game last year that makes you excited about what he can do in 21?
I saw a guy with a twitch. And when you hear that word twitch, it's like his reactions to stuff and his confidence when he's running towards the football. Like, there are a lot of guys who have that twitch, and at the moment of truth, either you kind of slow down or you don't run through the guy, you don't make the play. I don't see any of that in DJ Reed. And then he's got that underdog mentality. You know, he's like, look, man, I got the 49ers didn't want to take a chance on me. I'm getting an opportunity here. I'm going to take advantage. He went to a junior college. Like, if you
he's a smaller guy.
He's a smaller dude. Like, he has that underdog mentality, and he plays with it. The same type of twitch I see in that dude, I think I see in Trey Brown, but I just think DJ has the experience. He's ready to go. And you see him on punt returns, too. You have to be a confident athlete to do punt return. It is like a herd of lions running at you while the football is in the air, and he didn't flinch not once. He did have a fumble. People are going to remember that.
Yeah, unfortunately, because it was in the final game. But he had so many good moments, too, against Washington. He had a great game. And his debut, I mean, Seahawks debut against San Francisco, ironically, he had a great game. Yep. I mean, I remember the defense struggling up until that point, and then this was, what, week 9, 8, 9, 10, seeing him come in and think, wow, like, is this guy better than Shaquille Griffin right now? Because Shaq had been kind of on and off that year, and it was just a phenomenal game for him. So I know that there are so many question marks fans have about cornerback, but I do think DJ Reed proves there's some reason to be excited about the potential. All right, it is 11:13. That means it's time for headlines.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrite.
Presented by Teela Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Big news this morning in Major League Baseball. The Cleveland Indians announced they will be changing their team name to the Cleveland Guardians beginning in 2022. What is the real headline?
Yeah, maybe Guardians is a weird name for a baseball team, but counterpoint, at least it's not racist. It is a low bar to clear. A low bar to clear. Washington. I think the number one critique I see, and I believe it, is it sounds like an XFL team name or an arena league team name. And Curtis, you said, you tweeted, every team name sounds weird when you first say it. But I'm sorry, Guardians does sound extra weird for like a pro baseball
It sounds
team.
Weird right now because we've
it's
been saying Cleveland
weird.
Indians for over 100 years.
Guardians has a vibe to it that is XFL-y.
Guardians feels like this team was established in 2021.
That's what it is. It's a new team name.
Yeah.
Which is probably
we're talking
point.
About Cleveland. You know, like Cleveland has 100 years of history, and to go to the Guardians, it sounds weird. And then I saw the logo, and I'm like, all right, I'm not really feeling
well,
that.
Well, it's named after like a pair of statues that sit on the like outskirts of Cleveland, like the Guardians of Cleveland or whatever. So there's a little bit of a city tie-in
there. All right, thanks for that, because I was literally confused. I'm like, where did Guardians come from? So now there's some context.
All right, next up.
Yeah.
Headline Rewrites.
In baseball again, we've got some trade news last night as the Rays acquired DH Nelson Cruz in a trade with the Minnesota Twins. What is the real headline?
The Mariners displaying the kind of frugality that would make your grandparents proud. I had someone text in earlier when we did headlines for the first time saying, Stacey, it's prospects, not money. Yeah, I understand. But the point is that you want your organization to be aggressive. For the purposes of this joke, this headline, I'm tying being aggressive with not being frugal. And also, I'm sorry, whose grandparents aren't exceptionally frugal? Exceptionally frugal. My grandma will be the first person to tell me, like, where she got every single pot, pan, and pair of jeans that she has from Value Village or Goodwill.
Good move by Tampa. I mean, I think his average is better than all the DHs combined. I think I saw out there slugging percentage, all that good stuff. Good for them. It baffles me. Like, this past All-Star game, just seeing all these ex-Mariners in there, I'm like, how do I take this? All right, are they being frugal? Are they planning towards the future? Are they letting talent go? Good for Nelson, man. Still playing at a high level. Get your money. I ain't mad at you.
I would have loved to see him with the Mariners. I know we talked about this to open the show when Paul was in here, and I think what disappointed, and Curtis, I know you pointed to this because you were looking at the comparison of what Tampa had to give up and then what it would have meant for Seattle to give up those same kind of value prospects, and you were like, it was nothing. It was people you could handle, you know, dispensing with for that year.
Yeah, there wasn't a ton of risk involved in the prospects that the Rays gave up. And we talk all the time about how the Mariners have such a deep farm system. Well, if we're so worried about losing the number 10 and number 17 prospect that the Mariners have, then maybe it's not so deep after all. Like, you're going to give up guys that are still a couple years away from making the big leagues for a guy that can easily help out your offense. He would be your best hitter by far. It wouldn't even be close. And yet we're worried about potentially, and who's to say the Mariners were even involved in trade discussions with the Twins over Nelson Cruz, but looking at what the Rays gave up, it stinks because you know the Mariners could have given up just as much as what Tampa Bay did and probably would have been better off because
now
of it.
Will you be a little more forgiving of not getting Nelson if they manage to get a starting pitcher or just another bat in the lineup?
Please.
Yeah.
I need someone on the mound. Montero, good luck to you, buddy. Just do something, please.
Someone texted in all caps about Montero. Did they try to call you earlier?
No, but okay. I could feel their energy. Yeah. They said what I was thinking. I appreciate that.
Someone on the text line was livid that Rafael Montero was in. And you guys, all they needed was a run. At that point, one run to tie it. You're good. Just get back. Get your chance. No, wasn't
like
happening.
Forcing a circle into a square.
It's tough. It's tough stuff.
Headline rewrite.
In the NFL, Devontae Adams and the Packers have broken off extension talks and they have no plans to resume them. What is the real headline?
Breaking off talks with no plans to resume them sounds like Aaron Rodgers' approach to his family. It's the same joke I'm going to make every time. It's always the same joke.
It still hits, though.
It still does.
It does.
It's a classic.
It's got a slugging percentage of 1,000.
That's exactly what it is. It's an oldie but a goodie. Man, it's interesting. The Seahawks are going to be traveling to face the Packers. I don't know if it's before or after the bye. It's on the road in the middle of the season. Now, obviously, if you've got Aaron Rodgers there, if you've got Devontae Adams, I mean, that's a game that I'm not holding out hope you're going to dominate. That's a game that's really tough. If you go there and you don't have Adams and you don't have Rodgers, I don't know where this team stands right now. Do you think this is all smoke?
I don't. I think Rodgers, as a receiver, it's all about your quarterback. Can your quarterback get you the football? Now, we're hearing about Jordan Love over there. He doesn't look too hot. Now, if Aaron Rodgers is close to not showing up for training camp, not being there, if I'm Devontae Adams, you have to be selfish and look out for yourself. I'm not going to have the future Hall of Famer last year MVP here. Why should I be here? I need to be able to get the football. I think it's real. I think Devontae Adams is having real conversations. I think Aaron Rodgers is having real conversations. We'll see. But if Aaron goes, Adams is next. He's sneaking out the back door.
All right. And I am also wondering if, looking ahead here, kind of what Aaron Rodgers could do if he ends up leaving and going to another team. It wouldn't be in 2020. We're all accepting that isn't happening this year, right? We're all accepting it.
I mean, we've seen
training camp trades.
We've seen training camp deals get done. Think of Jadeveon Clowney a couple of years ago. That happened in the middle of training camp. Who's to say Aaron Rodgers doesn't get dealt in the middle of camp? Who's to say he even reports? If he doesn't report, he's not playing for the Packers this year.
I think that's it's tough at quarterback to trade in the middle of training camp.
Brett Favre, I think, got dealt to the Jets in the middle of camp.
It's easier with a guy like Rodgers because you have I think you have a little more confidence that a guy like Rodgers can come into your team without knowing anything about your playbook, anything about your team, and make you better.
Where does he go, though?
Well, I know Denver for the longest time was a team people were pointing to.
They need to look. You know what? If I'm the Saints, man, you don't know what's going on with your quarterback situation down there.
Yeah, but their cap situation is
That's true.
I don't know if they fixed it. I don't know if they've since fixed it, but their cap situation was in trouble.
They're paying Taysom Hill $140 million. It's not actually $140 million.
I was going to say, a lot of that's like fake money.
But it is $140 million. Like, you're paying a guy a lot of money. You got to see what you have in it.
The Saints are going to be one of those teams that has the biggest area or the biggest discrepancy between whether they can be great or horrible.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, you have Alvin Kamara. You have, what's Michael Thomas's status? Is he going to be missing a good chunk of time?
It looks like he'll start camp on the PUP list.
Okay, so starting camp on the PUP list, which could mean starting the season on the PUP list. We'll see. You've got so many great players, like elite players, and you know that like Winston can be good, but you have no idea what it's all going to look like when it comes together.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the receiving core, Tre'Quan Smith, Deontay Harris. Other than Kamara and Michael Thomas, they don't really have much over there right now. So you need a quarterback to kind of fill that void. Like we said, Winston's going to throw the ball all over the field, just as he's throwing it to the right team. Taysom Hill is going to run all over the field, but how long is he going to last? You're going to treat him like a running back? This is going to be it's going to take great coaching by Peyton over there this year.
Taysom Hill is going to continue to have a game where he throws like 10 complete passes, and then the following Monday we have conversations about, like, did he just become a quarterback? Is this the guy? Is this happening for you? Because the bar is just going to be right there. It's going to be like, did you throw a touchdown pass? Wow, he might be a franchise guy. All right. Mariners' current first baseman. That feels weird to say. Mariners' first baseman, Ty France, going to join us in just a few minutes. Do not go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Here's the stretch and the pitch. Swung on and a fly ball. Deep into the gap in left center field. Going and going and goodbye baseball. Viva la France. Ty France with his ninth home run of the season. A two-out, three-run blast here in the top of the fifth inning, giving the Mariners a 6-0 lead in the ballgame.
The man himself, Ty France, joining us now on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Ty, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
We're great, thanks. Hey, you guys have a big homestand here. You got a series against the A's. You're only one game in. Then you got one against Houston. And you're also in the thick of the wild card race. So I'm curious about the feeling in the clubhouse right now.
Yeah, you know, we're feeling well. We've been playing good baseball lately. Didn't come out on top last night, but like you said, this is a big homestand for us, and just gotta come out and keep doing what we're doing.
Ty, before I ask you my baseball question, man, I know you're from California, West Covina. I'm from Culver City, down the road from you, down that 110. How you like the Northwest so far?
So far, it's treated me well. You hear all these stories about, just it being nothing but rain, but, so far the weather's been beautiful here. It's really cool scenery. Having the fans back at the ballpark, it's been, so far I have no complaints.
All right, so now my baseball question. I'm a football guy. 16 weeks, boom, bam, we're done. You guys play so many games, so many highs, so many lows. I don't know if you listen to the media and all the stuff that we talk about. Like, how do you stay even keel throughout a long baseball season, knowing you're going to lose games, you're going to get hot, you're going to have good moments, bad moments? How do you stay even?
I think you kind of, mentioned it, just understanding that it's a long year. You can't ride the highs, you can't ride the lows. You just got to, take it one game at a time. It's a grind. This game will beat you up, and just got to find ways to keep it fun and go out there every night and give your all, and let the chips fall where they do.
Has your time in Seattle or this year surprised you in any way? Because I always think like how weird it must be to either be acquired via trade or just sign somewhere in free agency even, but to be traded somewhere, to land somewhere. You're there with a new team. You don't know what to expect. I mean, when you look back at how the season has gone so far, is it a pleasant surprise? Is it what you expected? What kind of feeling do you have?
You know, coming in last year, we had a strong second half. And so I think coming into spring, we all had very high expectations. And, you know, we've held each other accountable. And so I don't want to say I'm surprised at all. I know we're very capable of it. But to be, you know, at this point in the year where we're at, I'm very happy. But definitely, you know, the job's not done. We got to keep fighting and see where we're at the end of the year.
Now, Ty, you guys got some big games coming up. Obviously, you got your series with the A's, and then you got Houston coming into town. Do you guys put any extra emphasis on these games, knowing that, you know, these are big? These are teams who have been successful. These are teams you have to beat to get into that wild card chase. Or do you take the approach that you just mentioned and say, look, man, we got a game on Thursday. We'll play on Thursday. Got a game on Friday. I'll worry about Friday.
Yeah, I mean, you got to take it one game at a time. But at the same time, you know, like you mentioned, these games are important. You know, Oakland's right above us in the wild card, and Houston's leading the division. So, you know, as many steps forward as we can take this week, it'll be huge for us down the long run.
Why do you keep getting hit by pitches?
You know, I wish I had an answer for you. It's been the story of my life. You know, it started in college. For some reason, you know, got hit a ton throughout my college career, coming up through the minor leagues, got hit a ton, and, you know, it's kind of transferred over. So in college, we were praised for, you know, not getting out of the way and letting the ball hit you, and I've kind of just carried that over. You don't really get praised as much anymore, but it definitely helps, you know, the on-base percentage and stuff like that.
See, Ty, that's why I stopped playing baseball in high school, because I saw a curveball going right at me. I stepped out the box. My boys are yelling at me. Then I stand there. I get hit by one.
You're like, I'm done forever. I'm done playing this game.
I respect you guys for that. And the rule was you're not supposed to rub it, like the spot where you get hit. Is that still the rule, or are you in the league now? It just doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, it's something you don't really – it's one of those unwritten rules. You just don't do it.
Well, I do appreciate you being honest about, like, that was it for me.
That was it.
Hey, what's been, my co-host Jake, who's out today, you're like his favorite player to watch. He always says, oh my guy, Ty France, whenever you do anything in a game, he'll text Curtis and I. He and his wife just had their baby girl this morning, so he's out today. He's going to be very jealous Bump and I are interviewing you. So I'm curious, because he's talked about a lot of these moments. What's been your own personal favorite moment that you've had as a team so far, or for you as a player?
I think as a player so far this year, kind of my personal favorite moment was that walk-off against Houston earlier in the year. And then, you know, just as a team, like the close games we've been winning, and just the amount of fight that we have, it's been fun to be a part of and fun to watch. And, you know, hopefully the guys can keep that rolling.
Now, I'm sure you heard that Cleveland has changed their name to the Guardians. We have our own feeling here at 710 about the name itself. How do you feel about Cleveland changing the name to the Guardians? You feeling that or not?
Yeah, I just saw it this morning. I mean, it's a cool name. I haven't really looked too much into it yet, but, yeah, no, it'll be cool for them, cool for their fan base, and you know, give them something new to look forward to.
Hey, I'm curious. I've always wondered, you know, how Service is. We talk to him once a week for the Scott Service Show, and he comes on, and we'll ask him about all of you guys, but we never get a chance to ask players about Service, really, and kind of see that side to him. And I have to say, Ty, watching from the outside, those moments you guys are in where it's a one-run game or it's an extras, the fact that you guys have been able to so consistently win, it's so hard to figure out, like, what goes into that, right? Because it's a lot of factors, and it's just a miraculous performance when it comes to those high-pressure situations. How much of that do you put on your manager?
Yeah, I mean, we rely on him a lot. You know, he leads the team, and you know, the whole coaching staff in general has done a very good job, you know, just help guide us and, you know, let us play our game and putting enough trust in us to go out there, you know, every night and get the job done. And, So a lot of it falls into their hands, and, you know, very, my short time here so far, very thankful for the way that they've handled things and, you know, just letting us be ourselves.
Ty, you guys have had a lot of success in extra innings this year. The new rule, obviously, is the runner starting on second base. Are you a fan of that rule, or do you like the traditional extra inning play?
I think personally I'm a fan of it. I know a lot of people say it's not, you know, traditional baseball, but, you know, it prevents those 17, 18 inning games and, you know, gives it a little more fun once extra innings start.
I'm right on board with you. I could argue this forever. I'm a fan of the extra or the runner in extras. I have another question about another rule change. The league obviously cracked down on the foreign substance, the use by pitchers. Have you, as a hitter, noticed a difference at all in facing opposing pitchers?
You know, it's something I haven't really paid too much attention to. There's a lot that goes on that you can get lost in, and you know, me being a position player, it's not as you know, important for me, but there's been a handful of guys where you notice their, you know, sliders aren't as sharp or their fastball doesn't take off as much, but you know, for the most part, it's something I try not to pay attention to.
Got another question for you. Like generational type thing, I guess. So I always watch pitchers, and when they strike guys out, they are yelling, they're hitting their chest or flexing and stuff, but for some reason batters cannot flip the bat. They can admire their home runs. Where do you stand with that? Do you think that the game, that players should show more emotion as they play this game, or do you feel like you're kind of with the old school, like just you hit a bomb, go around the bases, act like you've done it before?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's up to the player. It really doesn't bother me either way. You know, it's fun watching guys like, you know, Tatis throw his bat in the dugout and do his little stair step around third. But at the same time, you know, when a pitcher strikes you out in a big situation, and he wants to get excited, you know, I'm all for it. You know, as long as, you know, they're cool with us doing it, I'm cool with them doing it.
Have you ever, out of curiosity, just tried to see how high you could flip a bat? Because I'm if I could, I would just throw like 12 and just see how high I could get them.
No, it at some point it's like, you know, I think a little toss is fine, but there's no point of a, you know.
Got it. Not excessive.
Yeah.
Ty France, a very modest bat flipper.
Yeah, but I mean, like I said, every guy's different. You know, some guys want to throw it to the moon. That's on them.
All right. He is Mariners first baseman, Ty France. Ty, thanks so much for taking the time, and good luck this series.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
All right. You've got questions. We've got answers. So get your questions in right now for What I Need to Know. Seahawks, Mariners, anything. Whatever it is, text it now to 710-710. What I Need to Know, coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
It's What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling Electric. Got Michael Bumpus in for Jake Heaps today. And so, Bump, because listeners obviously know this, you've been with us all day today, I have some questions just for you.
All right,
so I'll start with this one. What I Need to Know, Bump. Which current or former quarterbacks do you wish you could have caught balls for?
First one would be Russell Wilson, because that means I would have stayed in the league longer than I would have and got a couple more contracts. So first has got to be Russell Wilson. Then, of course, the GOAT, Tom Brady. And after that, you got to go with the kid, Pat Mahomes.
Okay. That's who. Pat Mahomes would be a fun one.
Yeah.
I think Russell Wilson would be a good one if you were like, one of my skills is being able to tell, for instance, like, where the quarterback is at all times, or look back, or do whatever. Like if like a Doug Baldwin, like that is an exceptionally good relationship for him.
Yeah,
for both those guys. Mm-hmm. All right. What I Need to Know. Now this also applies to you. Which football position puts out the best sports media personalities?
Ooh, what football position?
Be honest, Bump.
Be honest.
Former receiver.
All right. Well, all right. There's. What are you looking for? If you're looking for just straight analytical approach, then you got to go quarterbacks.
Right.
Because they're the guys who kind of break things down differently. I think Randy Moss is awesome. I love the perspective he brings. I think Keyshawn Johnson is awesome. So those are my receivers. So it's got to be on the offensive side of the ball, though. I feel like more the charisma is on the offensive side.
Really?
Of the ball.
I would think the opposite. I immediately was thinking which defensive backs or which defensive players, because you've got to have a lot of charisma on defense, especially if you're a veteran leader on defense. And if the thing is, if you're a veteran and you're a leader on an NFL team, you're outgoing no matter what. Yeah. Or you're like a Dwayne Brown, strong, silent type, but like you are someone that can command respect from a room full of alphas.
Yeah. Look at Shannon Sharp. I mean, he's right? Tight end.
Okay. What I need to know, what is the Seahawks' biggest need right now, and can Ken Norton lead this defense above top 15 in the league this year? So two different questions packed into one.
Biggest need right now is to protect Russell Wilson. I mean, that's the biggest need. If you don't do that, or at least he doesn't feel like you're doing that, my guy is gone after this year. He really has to feel that, and then they have to be successful. Ken Norton, what was it, top 15? Was there a number
to
that?
Top 15, just first top half of the league.
Top half of the league? Yeah, for sure. I think they can. They showed that last year. They finished, I want to say, top half of the league. So, I think they can do that. And people got to realize, it's not just Ken Norton, man. That's Pete Carroll's defense as well. Pete Carroll is on the phone, in his ear during the game. So it takes both of them. But I think they can definitely do it.
How about this one? What I need to know, for each of your alma maters, so Bumpa, former Coug, sorry, current Coug, I forgot. You're never not
always a Coug.
Coug. Curtis went to Arizona. I went to Washington. What I need to know from Jen in Beaverton, and she says, go Cougs. For each of your alma maters, what is one thing you like about it that's not a stereotype? So, like, you couldn't say, for instance, ASU and Wazoo are party schools.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't say, like, oh, the parties are fun, even if it's true, but it has to be not a stereotype. Yeah. So maybe one thing that you love about your school that it's not known for, necessarily.
You know, for Wazoo, I would say, just back in my day at least, how safe it was, man. Like, I came from West LA, where you make one wrong turn, you're in a bad neighborhood, you got to worry about things. My mom told me, the only time she slept well at night was when I was in college, because she felt like it was super safe. So I would pick up hitchhikers in the Palouse, drunk students. I'd take them to their door, drop them off. It was just a real community type feel. So just it being safe in community.
Curtis, what about you?
I would say our campus is beautiful.
Yeah,
which is. A lot of people, when they think Arizona, they think it's just desert. They think it's just cactus everywhere. But if you walk onto the campus of University of Arizona, it is like, whoa. Like, this is kind of a school that you kind of almost sort of like stereotypical college, but with a lot of sun drenched onto it. A lot of palm trees. It's good stuff.
I would say the same thing about Washington. I'll also add, Washington is in a city. And one thing I've always heard is like, oh, I liked going to Wazoo because it was more of a small town. It is a very different feeling. But the area around Washington is essentially made for the students that are there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you go to Uville, if you go to the Ave, the closer you get to campus, the more it feels like you're in like it's a campus area. So it is somewhat like, if you're not a huge fan of living in a big city, you still get the feeling of everything around you is still like your little college bubble. So let's see. What is your favorite summertime activity?
You know what it is, Stace.
What is it?
It's golf.
Oh, of course.
Oh, those nice. Greens
yeah.
playing.
Yeah, all those greens playing.
Golf all day. It is the one, golf and baseball are the two sports that I just wasn't very good at. Anything else, I can just muscle my way through and get it. But it's so skilled. My kids are starting to get the golf bug, too. My oldest, Michael, and then my middle child, Kobe, whose birthday is today. Happy birthday,
Happy
Kobe.
Happy birthday, Kobe.
Turned 9. They love to play. It gets me out. And now because they like to play, that means I get to play more because now the wife don't trip if I'm out there with my boys playing golf. So, golf.
Curtis, I don't love summer. I got to be honest with you guys.
Oh, I love summer.
I love eating and drinking outside. Is there some such happy hour on a patio is my favorite summertime activity.
that's a good one.
Thank you.
Sitting under those misters.
That's what I want.
That's
yeah.
perfect summertime activity.
My favorite summertime activity is hiding from being outside and drinking. that's it for me. Let's see. How about this one? What I need to know. I've been homesick all week, eating popsicles and drinking pop. What are your favorite comforts when you don't feel well?
Favorite comforts when I don't feel well.
Watching The Price is Right.
Yeah.
That's the move. Like, when you're feeling sick, you sit on the couch, you watch Price is Right.
Yeah.
Choose up an hour of your time.
Good TV that you don't have to pay attention to. Comfort TV and comfort food. The combination's unbeatable.
Yeah.
All right. Last one here. What I need to know. This is a tough one. Who has the more impressive active career? 43-year-old Tom Brady or 40-year-old Sue Bird, and yes, I am including her Olympic gold medals. Whoa! Subert doesn't get enough. I don't know how to this day she doesn't get enough recognition.
Yeah.
But she doesn't get enough recognition.
She's
That's
a GOAT.
Greatest of all time.
She's a GOAT, man. She's one of the GOATs. Unfortunately, I got to go with Tommy Boy, though, man. Seven rings. He's 42. And he's talking that talk now, too. You see his recent interview? Like, he's letting people know. He said, look, these teams passed on a guy who could be Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan. I got to go with Tom Brady, but Sue Bird is
for overall athletic accomplishments, given the Olympic medals, it's hard not to give it to Sue. But Tom has dominated his league like almost no one else. Mm-hmm.
I think the very first statue that should go in outside of Climate Pledge Arena
Sue Bird.
Should be Sue Bird.
Has to
absolutely
be.
Right. All right. That'll do it for us today. Bump, thanks for hanging out with us today. We appreciate it. It was
Thank
fun.
You.
For Curtis Rogers, I'm Stacey Ross. This has been Jake and Stacey. Don't go anywhere. Wyman and Bob coming your way next.